advocates in the fight for global justice and invites us to reflect on power, resistance, and self-determination. Again, that's Enemigo Imperialísimo. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. The show will be up until September 25th. More information can be found at kwoo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, sponsored by peer-run support communities Freedom Center, The Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network and is online at kboo.fm/madnessradio. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Nika Noel. Nika is a writer, director, and sometimes performer in adult films. She's an innovator in what is called romance porn or storyline-driven porn and has created 8 studios in all genres of adult films, straight, gay, lesbian, and transgender. She was a pioneer in real sex in adult films and is a 3-time winner of the Feminist Porn Awards as well as a winner of the AVN and XBiz Awards. So thank you for joining us on Madness Radio, Nika Noel.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really interested in having you on the show. Pornography is something that is widespread in our culture. It's a huge industry. It doesn't get talked about enough. And what I've seen is that when there are discussions about pornography, it really tends to be a pro-porn or anti-porn conversation. And that's really not the conversation that I want to have. I want to have more of a conversation about pornography, adult films, explicit sex is a part of our media entertainment world. It's part of the lives that we live in our society, and what kind of relationships do we have with it? What kind of questions does it raise? So it's really great to have you on the show today.
Thank you. And I'm really happy to approach it from that side too, because it's also difficult for me that, you know, because of the politics with society sort of attacking us a little bit and then the industry just wanting to defend itself, a lot of things don't get spoken about honestly. There's the offense and the defense going on. So there's a lot in between that doesn't get spoken about too much.
And you've been really trying to make porn better quality, to make it more realistic, to make it more of an art form. And I think that one of the problems with pornography has been really the result of there's a lot of bad pornography out there because of the taboo and the marginalization. Would you say that that's true?
I would. And that's what I do generally say is that, you know, men get blamed for the fact that pornography has traditionally been, you know, quote, sleazy, or it's been degrading to women or unrealistic or objectifies women. But I think it has more to do just with the mentality of the people that were creating porn, the marginalization, the sort of self-loathing, the stigma that was inflicted upon people in porn created this climate of just, you know, making stuff that wasn't very artistic and wasn't reflective of a positive attitude about the art form itself.
And so in your work, you're trying to do things a little bit differently and with very innovative approaches. How did you get started as a performer and also a writer, director, and producer in adult films?
Well, I'd always been intrigued with the adult industry, and I had worked as a stripper for a while when I was in my 20s. But actually, more than really being drawn to the lifestyle or partying or anything like that, because I never actually partied very much or did any of those things, I like to examine the people in it. I was drawn to the stigma. I was drawn to the way that people were both fascinated and drawn to people in the adult industry, and also repulsed by them and frightened of them, threatened by them. So that was very interesting to me. Then I became a journalist and I started writing about the adult industry a little bit. And that led me to working for a lesbian studio called Girlfriends Films. And the owner of the company, it was a small niche company, and the owner of the company was a man, and it was a lesbian company. So he wanted a woman to sort of be the face of the company and be writing the scripts and directing them. And he made me an offer to kind of come on as creative director and take over the direction of the studio. So I quit my job and I did it. And from there, I started getting a lot of other offers to build other studios.
Yeah, you said that you were drawn to the stigma of it. And I think that's what's so interesting about sexuality and sex in general is that there's a way in which obviously were motivated and interested and intrigued and drawn to sex. And at the same time, there's this incredible repression and hidden quality and shame and taboo. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to invite someone who's been a performer and a producer and director of films, rather than an expert or a sex therapist or psychologist or something like that, to really get an inside perspective.
Yeah, I definitely think that academic knowledge only goes so far. It's such a different culture. It's completely different than what we refer to as, you know, the civilian culture.
You said that a lot of what we think of as the sort of the stereotype of pornography, or the kind of the typical pornography that's really dominated the industry for so long, really isn't a reflection of bad male desire. It's more of a reflection of the fact that it's taboo and it's marginalized and it's been hidden. It's been wrapped in shame. And I think that if you look at pornography and you look at some of the typical sorts of images that we have, it seems that really often the films are appealing to male anxiety, that men are anxious about viewing porn, they're anxious about their sexual desire, and so they want to see images of women being subservient and kind of reassuring them that they're desiring the man. And how is the pornography that you create different than that? What is it that you're trying to create in the films that you produce?
Well, when I first started creating straight porn, boy-girl porn, as it's called, I noticed that, and one of the reasons that I didn't personally watch boy-girl porn at all was that it looked very impersonal. I actually thought, more than objectifying the woman, it really objectified the man, because you never saw the man's face, really. I mean, throughout the sex scene, you would just see him from the torso down to, you know, just to his thighs, just so that you could see his body and his genitals. The focus was really on the woman and her face and her expressions, and the man was just kind of there to provide the penis. So I thought that was very unappealing, because it didn't give you a sense of any connection between two human beings. So the first thing that I wanted to do was to give equal camera time to the male in the movie, and to make sure that the camera was also on his face and his facial expressions. Also to make sure that the couple were touching each other, making eye contact. You know, it's very important in porn, or it was and still continues to be, to get those hardcore shots where you can see what's actually happening, the hardcore sex, because everybody thought, well, that's what people are watching porn for. So we have to give them these very, like, these clinical close-ups of a penis going into a vagina. So in order to get those shots, obviously the bodies can't be pressed together, or you can't see those shots. So what happens is that people open up for the camera, and now they're not really touching each other because their bodies are kind of angled toward the camera. And with that change in body language, what you see is this loss of connection between the partners. So a lot of the things that people were looking at porn and going, oh, it's objectifying women, or it's doing this or it's doing that, a lot of it was really more production concerns in terms of getting the shots that were needed, or that they thought were needed, which were these hardcore shots. It made it look very impersonal. It made it look very cold and unemotional. So those things I wanted to make sure to change. And I decided that getting the body language and the people looking at each other and really holding each other and having natural sex positions, that was going to be the most important thing to me.
And you've also added more storylines and creating characters and making that more important.
Well, I did, because the mentality was, people don't want to see stories in porn. They fast forward through it to get to the sex. And I thought that was probably because most of the setups in porn were things that were sort of comical and that we couldn't really relate to. Not many people can relate to the pizza man coming to the door and inviting him in for sex for absolutely no reason other than he's there with a pizza. But what we can relate to is getting a crush on somebody that we're not supposed to have a crush on. Maybe our mom's friend, maybe, I don't know, your brother's girlfriend, or, you know, things that are sort of forbidden that most of us have experienced to some degree in our lives. And most of us have just let that moment pass and we didn't do anything about it. But what I decided to do with my films is take it a step further. And what if you acted on that forbidden attraction.
And the stereotype might be that, well, this is more appealing to women, but actually most of the people who are buying your films are men.
That was why I took issue with the term feminist porn, to be honest. I feel very protective of my male fans and of men in general, just because they get blamed for everything. And I know that it was the male fans that were telling me, you know, like, I just want to see realistic looking women. I want to see women I can relate to, the kind of women that I've dated. I want to see some older women. Men were saying all these things, and they were not misogynistic comments. And they were not like, I want to see more objectification of women. You know, it was just the opposite.
I think one of the things that happens in discussions about pornography in society is that pornography starts to become a scapegoat for all the other issues that we're concerned about. For example, the issue of body image, and people see a pornographic film and then they see these people who have, obviously, they're performers, they have, you know, very gym athletic bodies. The women might have breast augmentation surgery, there's plastic surgery, there's all these different things. And I think that what happens is that we tend to start to blame porn for that issue of body image in society.
You can't really do that with porn anymore, because porn has just become way too diverse in terms of the types of bodies and the ages of women and men that are represented in porn. You see everything all across the board. One of my favorite performers, and the performers that I have used the most in all of my films, has been Magdalene St. Michaels, who is in her 50s and is a beautiful woman, but a natural woman. She looks like your nice lady next door. She does not look like she was engineered in a lab, you know. And a lot of the girls these days are not getting breast implants. You see short women, tall women, big boned women, all kinds of different women. And that was something that I found really wonderful when I came to porn, and that I was surprised about, because I had always heard, too, you know, they're all Barbie dolls and they're just super skinny with huge breast implants. And that's not true at all. You see a wide range of body types and ages. So I would look more at fashion magazines when you want to blame, you know, women's body image issues on something, because in fashion magazines, you really do only see skinny women, young women.
And the fashion magazines are in our face every time we go to a grocery store or go shopping. We have these images on billboards and we have the television. It's just inundating us. And I think that when pornography comes up as a discussion, we start to scapegoat porn in a way that, well, there is this big social issue about body image. It is a huge issue in the United States, but let's talk about body image as an issue in general. And I think that it's a mistake to think politically or in educational terms about pornography. Really what it's about masturbation, it's about fantasy, it's about entertainment. I don't think that we need to look at pornography as an instruction manual of how to be a person or how to be a sexual being. And people say, well, you know, a lot of young people these days, a lot of teenagers are getting their sexual education from pornography. And I think the issue there is that we need to provide sexual education to our young people, that it's a failing of our educational system, it's a failing of our media, it's a failing of our parenting. And really it comes from the taboo and the stigma around that.
Absolutely. And I think that this is not a public service announcement. I mean, obviously there are certain things that, you know, are illegal to portray, and that morally, I think even most people in porn would have a problem portraying certain things. As far as consenting adults go, I think almost anything should be able to be explored as long as both people are safe and both people are consenting, the performers, because actually it's wonderful to allow people a safe outlet to watch their fantasy, to be able to masturbate to their fantasy, knowing that everybody involved was safe and consenting, and that conditions were good, and that everybody's fine and healthy. And I think then that it creates a more positive attitude towards sex in general, and also between the genders. You know, there's a lot of animosity between men and women, and there's a lot of misunderstandings about who men are, who women are. And that's something that really bothers me a lot. Not that I'm coming from a political place, but it's on my mind when I make my porn that I want to portray men and women as relating to each other, even if they're having, you know, hate sex because they're angry at each other, that you're showing a more textured relationship, that you're showing a more honest relationship between the genders.
this book that became actually, I think, the most successful paperback in history. It sold 100 million copies. It's called 50 Shades of Grey. And it's basically a bondage and discipline sadomasochistic relationship that emerges really out of an author who was writing kind of fan fiction about the Twilight Vampire series. And the majority of the readers are women. And I think that if we're honest, we will discover that, you know, hey, our fantasies aren't politically correct, that a lot of women have rape fantasies, a lot of men have degradation fantasies.
Well, I think, too, it's going to help us to make the distinction between what turns us on in the bedroom and what we want to watch when we're masturbating, what kind of porn turns us on, and what we do the rest of the time and who we're really attracted to in real life. These are very different things, and people are often judged and condemned by the type of porn that they like or the sort of fantasies they have, whether it's feminists that sort of condemn women that want to see the rape fantasies portrayed, or, you know, men that are kind of vilified because they want to watch a scene and so, oh, he hates women. In real life, who we're attracted to is often very different than who we want to see in a porn film. And the kinds of things that we want to act out with a partner in the bedroom are often not reflective of the rest of the relationship.
And a lot of people don't quite realize that. They don't realize that they have the freedom to have fantasies, to have a whole inner reality that may not necessarily mean that that's what they want.
It requires us all being honest and saying, you know, we all have fantasies that we wouldn't want everybody to know about because they're not politically correct and they don't actually reflect my, you know, quote, beliefs or my political position or, you know, this is where we're really still very primal. And this is our primal animal selves that we get to express during sex. And if we can acknowledge that and stop judging each other for it and make sure that porn is created in a way where everybody is safe and healthy, and then people can start to feel more positive about the fact that they watch porn. They don't have to feel ashamed about it. They don't have to feel ashamed of their fantasies. But there's just this collective lying going on where everybody's judging everybody else. And that's what's making it so difficult. And that's what's keeping, you know, porn and the people that work in it stigmatized, and which is really unfair because everybody watches porn, yet everybody's looking down on the group of people that provide it. And really, it's a privilege to be able to watch it. And people are lucky that there are performers that are willing to carry the stigma and the burden just so that you guys can go off in the privacy of your own home.
I think the openness can be really helpful to just be able to talk about taboo topics. And also, I think that there's a self-discovery aspect to this, that somehow it's empowering. It's sort of learning about yourself and feeling like this is who I am and that's okay. And
the truth is always empowering. 100% of the time, the truth is empowering.
And I think to get back to that potential of our birthright as sexual beings, it's going to take some exploration and take some openness. And often when we have conversations about pornography, then this issue of sex addiction comes up. And I would come back to the whole point earlier about we are scapegoating pornography for bigger issues, because I think with addiction, well, people are addicted to television, they're addicted to movies, they're addicted to screens in general. If someone's watching 6 hours of binge watching of a television series, we kind of don't have as much of a negative view as if they're watching hours and hours of pornography.
And there's a couple of reasons for that, and we need to look at that a little more closely, because first of all, you're absolutely right. Anything that triggers the reward center of the brain, whether it's food or sex or watching pornography or video games, you can become addicted to those things because they are pleasurable. So there's always a potential to become addicted to something that makes the brain feel rewarded. And porn certainly does fall into that category. So you can overindulge in porn just like you can overindulge in chocolate cake. So this is definitely something to be aware of. But one doesn't necessarily follow the other. And with porn, people immediately think if you start watching it, you will become addicted. You will start to be a deviant. You will, you know, it's almost like there's absolutely no choice in the matter. This is going to happen to you. And I think that is obviously a very extreme way to look at it. And it's very unrealistic. Most people have some form of visual aid, or they, you know, whether it's magazines or porn or something, most people masturbate to some sort of visual aid, even if it's just 50 Shades of Grey, if it's, you know, literature. But it makes people worried more than chocolate cake does or video games do, because I think it threatens people to think that their husband, their boyfriend, their wife, whatever the case may be, may become this sex maniac and their relationship will be destroyed.
We tend to demonize it in the same kind of way that we would substances, rather than being realistic and saying, look, there's a diversity of experiences. Different people have a different relationship to it. And certainly not everybody is going to feel that pornography is, and or even masturbation, are harmless things in their lives. There are many people who choose not to masturbate or not to look at pornography, and that may be part of their spiritual practice, or maybe part of their yoga practice, or maybe it's just part of them discovering how they want to relate to sexuality, to their partner. So there's a whole diversity here that once we start to have the conversation, we're not stuck in this kind of either or framework.
I think that there really is a genuine fear that people will stop valuing love and commitment and things like that, things that really are legitimately threatening to us on a primal level too. Sexual jealousy, we're hardwired for that. So this really hits very close to home, and that's why it's a little bit different. You know, we don't get jealous when our partner is eating too much chocolate cake, but we would get jealous if our partner is glued to the TV or their video recorder watching porn 24/7. That's a lot more personally threatening to us on a much more primal level.
This is really important because so many of the couples that I work with, pornography has become like the other woman or the other man. It's like an infidelity or an adultery. And I really think it's important to take a step back and say, look, we can't necessarily, again, scapegoat the porn, because really the issue is the quality of the relationship. Something is going on in a relationship if someone goes outside of the relationship to another partner, or if they start to become more interested in porn than in their partner. And so how can we support that couple to have a conversation, discover what it is that's going on in their relationship? Why is it interesting to go outside? Maybe that's something that needs to happen in the relationship. Maybe there's some changes or something happened.
Well, also, some people prefer to have more of a solitary sexual experience. They actually enjoy masturbation more than they enjoy being with another person. There's also that.
Which should be a completely acceptable expression in terms of diversity. That should be something that we should accept about people, I think.
Well, I think it's on a case-by-case basis. I mean, if the person is having trouble relating to other people and it's causing them pain and they're unhappy, then that's obviously not a good thing. But if this is just a feature of their natural disposition and they are not having any distress from it at all and they feel that they're leading a quality life, then yeah, I don't think it's anybody else's place to judge how people get their sexual pleasure, as long as it's not hurting anybody. But within a marriage or a relationship, obviously, compatibility issues come into play, and those things are legitimate. And if somebody feels very troubled by the fact that their partner watches a lot of porn, that's a legitimate complaint, because that's a compatibility issue. So it's not really about whether porn is good or bad. It's about the fact that one partner is unhappy.
If you're just tuning in, this is Madness Radio, and my guest today is Nika Noel. She's a writer, director, and sometimes performer in adult films. She's an innovator in what is called romance porn and has created 8 studios in all genres, straight, gay, lesbian, and transgender. She's a pioneer in real sex in adult films and is a 3-time winner of the Feminist Porn Awards, as well as a winner of the AVN and XBiz Award. Nika, one of the charges against pornography is that, well, it sexually objectifies women. It turns people into sexual objects. And what would you say about that?
First of all, I would say that I agree that there's been a lot of that, just showing people as bodies and there's no real connection and this is not really a human being. This is just a woman with a bunch of holes that are being, you know, probed and prodded. I think there was a lot of porn like that. There continues to be porn like that. I think sometimes there is a need, women have this need to watch porn where it's not personal, where it's just these images and where the people are anonymous. And it doesn't mean that they're going to go out and think, well, all women are like this, or I need to act like this with men. It's just that is what triggers your fantasy life. You don't want to think about anything too personal, anything too emotional. You just want to see the sex act. So there's that. I don't think there's anything wrong with it if you're showing consenting adults. that obviously everybody can feel that, well, these people consented to do this and everybody was treated well, that then I think it's absolutely fine. And like I said before, I really don't think anybody talked about how men were objectified and how men really were treated as just body parts. Their faces weren't even shown. But nobody ever complained about that. And the fact that, you know, male performers make so much less than female performers do. So really, you know, that's why I take up for men a little bit, because I'm like, well, you know, there's also been some objectification going on this. It's not just all women being objectified.
Do you think this is a broader tendency in the culture? Because what we're seeing is that so many of the TV shows and films that are on the different cable TV and starting to have explicit sex woven in. Do you think that there's a bigger tendency here to kind of open up into sexual realms in our media?
It's funny because mainstream is definitely starting to include more, you know, quote, pornographic images with violence as well. I have to say, one thing that's interesting to me is that I don't watch television at all. I haven't in well over a decade. So I went to the gym one day and on the treadmill was a little TV screen that I couldn't figure out how to turn off. And so I was sort of forced to watch what was on TV. And all I could do was turn the channels, and everything was incredibly violent. And I was like, my gosh, you know, this is what's on network television these days, and people are complaining about porn. I was very disturbed by it. And I think in general, you know, mainstream is adopting more violent imagery and also explicit sexual imagery. Meanwhile, in porn, you know, porn is becoming more like mainstream in the sense that we are developing our storylines and our production values have gone way up. So the two genres are definitely coming together.
We are just about out of time for the interview. Can you give us contact information and your website, and people can get in touch with you and find out more about your work?
Sure. My website is nikanoelstudios.com.
And can people surf that safely without worrying about images coming up?
It's actually a safe for work website. So you can definitely go to it from work and you won't see anything that is going to cause you to shut down your browser quickly when your boss walks by. Then my Twitter is at Nika Noel News. I mean, all of my studio websites that I've created, I guess the most recent ones would be Girl Candy Films and Hot Candy Films.
Nika Noel, thank you for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to an interview with Nika Noel. She's a writer, director, and sometimes performer in adult film. She's been an innovator in what's been called romance porn and has created 8 studios in all genres, straight, gay, lesbian, and transgender. She is a pioneer in portraying real sex in adult films and has been a 3-time winner of the Feminist Porn Awards, as well as the winner of the AVN and XBiz Awards. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, co-sponsored by the Icarus Project, Portland Hearing Voices, and Freedom Center. Madness Radio is hosted by Will Hall, and producer is Leah Harris. Madness Radio is based at KBOO in Oregon and can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network. Contact us at radio@madnessradio.net.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Charles Jordan Community Center in Portland. The Willamette and the Columbia Rivers provide sustenance, recreation, and economic benefits to our region. Yet these rivers are burdened with a legacy of industrial pollution and threatened with a future of toxic contamination. The Two Rivers, One City event will bring a broad network of river users together to share their stake in clean water. The event will include an overview of the various environmental justice issues related to the Portland Harbor Superfund cleanup and the oil by rail projects along the Columbia. Again, that's Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th at the Charles Jordan Community Center, 9009 North Foss Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Two Rivers, One City.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Enemigo Imperialismo,
Enemy Imperialism, a bilingual community art exhibit that explores the dimensions of imperialism in the world today. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. Artists around the world have responded to violence with work that questions the legitimacy of the state and empire. Enemigo Imperialísimo points to one of our common targets in the fight for global justice and invites us to reflect on power, resistance, and self-determination. Again, that's Enemigo Imperialísimo. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. The show will be up until September 25th. More information can be found at kwu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014. The event takes place Sunday, September 7th, and is a great way to detox after a long summer. Whether you're getting back from Labor Day weekend or decompressing from the burn, this is a great way to stay healthy through dance, foods, and multiple healing modalities. That's A Touch of Portland, Sunday, September 7th at Northwest 17th and Davis. Go to kbu.fm/touchofportland for more information on this event.
It's 12 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. It's time for the Noontime Jamboree. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grindle's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grindle's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grindle's Coffee House.
You got a gal you love her Sunday, then you get another for Monday.
Ain't nobody's business but my own. You say you're always home alone. How come I can't get you on the phone?
Well, that ain't nobody's business but my own.
Nobody's business. Nobody's business. Nobody's business but my own. Nobody's business. Nobody's business. Nobody's business but my own.
All night long you're playing poker. Tell me, what's the name of that joker?
Ain't nobody's business but my own. I come over and say, here I am.